Welcome to the Cemetery Chronicles. Hosted by two friends who manage cemeteries in the Twin Cities, this podcast takes you behind the gates and into the unique world of cemeteries. Join us as we share heartfelt stories, unexpected humor, and the profound moments that come with a career dedicated to honoring life and legacy. From the Paradise Picture Studio, here are your hosts, Dominic Pierre and Bobby Schoenroth.
All right, everybody, welcome. Podcast number 6. Bobby's back from Florida. I don't have a cold anymore. We were unable to get the video going last week. Oh my goodness, what a fiasco that was. Eventually, we'll get video for you guys eventually, but trust me, we're doing you a favor. You guys aren't seeing our ugly mugs, so you're fine.
Well, I've said it before. We have a face for radio, not TV.
That's true.
And also, you guys see what happens when I'm out of town. Things just fall apart around here.
What do you mean? What fell apart?
No video. Nothing's working.
I'll tell you what. The week you were gone last week, we had a nice party over at Oakland. It was pretty fun. I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind cleaning up after us, all the beer cans and whatnot. Don't worry about that. We have a special guest this week. How exciting is that? Bobby, you want to introduce our guest?
Yes, we have a very special guest that actually, oddly enough, Dominic and I have known for a long time. Ties went to same school Dominic did.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't need to talk about that school, but we have Carrie Hubbard here from Forest Lawn Cemetery over in Maplewood. Hi, Carrie. How are you?
Hello, boys. Hey. I'm doing so well. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Exciting. We went to the same school, I think. But Bobby and I, we were the number one class of the year. I don't think you were number one, were you?
And so it begins.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, welcome, Carrie.
We won't say what year she graduated. We'll keep that off the table.
Well,
I appreciate that.
We were in the school at the same time. We can say that, right?
Yes, that's true. That is true.
So, welcome. It's nice to have a fellow alum here on the podcast with us. Yeah, we do go way back, so it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is kind of fun. Definitely.
It's exciting because Forest Lawn has a crematory on site. So, and Bobby and I, we don't really know much about it. We accept the cremated remains, we bury them, but we don't know the process and how that all works. So it's fun to get Carrie here to talk about that.
Well, speak for yourself. Maybe I do know a little bit about it.
But I mean, I just assumed.
No,
little.
I don't.
Actually, highlight the little.
Yeah. No. Actually, nothing. I know nothing. So Carrie's here to teach us, too.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, we could start with that. Let's just start. Let's get some background, Carrie. Like, how long have you been in the industry here?
So I have been in the industry a little over 20 years.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I thought we weren't going to talk about age.
I know.
Wait, hold on a second.
And I am still in my 30s. Yeah, 20 years under my belt. And I've loved every single second of it.
And all of it at Forest Lawn?
Yes. Yep.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, this is definitely an East Side convention right here. We do get together, the East Side of St. Paul, or St. Paul in general. We're kind of a small little clique of cemeteries, which is kind of fun. We all enjoy hanging out, doing happy hours together. So
yes.
Yeah. So, so 20 years at Forest Lawn, you've been in the office, you've been on the grounds at all?
Not on the grounds doing actual work. You know, I supervise the grounds crew. I've been in the crematory, but my staff generally handles that side of things.
That's usually what my staff says, too, on the grounds. The people up in the office don't do actual work, is what they say.
That is not true. We do all the work.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Facilitated, anyway.
Got to watch out. Your grounds crew's going to be listening
to
this.
Wait a minute.
I can verify Dom does no work. Carrie, quick question for you. How did you get involved with the cemetery? Obviously, Dominic and I have stories with our families being involved. You know, I don't want to say that because my dad told me to go out and do my own thing numerous times, right? But he also took me to work every Saturday with him and got me excited about it. But how did you yourself get involved in this business?
Yeah. Okay. So to not give my age away, I was just a little bit lost, not really knowing what I wanted to do or, you know, who I wanted to be. So I just answered an ad in the newspaper for just like administrative work. And it just happened to be at the cemetery. Now, it did not say anything about working at a cemetery. It was just admin work. And
typical.
I know, right? But in all honesty, I could not have picked a better job for myself. You know, when people ask, well, how did you get into that? Or, you know, I never really was into death care or thought it would be a niche for myself, but I couldn't have picked something better out for myself.
Isn't that funny? That we all have to face that whenever we have to put advertising out there. I think we have to be pretty discreet. Otherwise, we're going to get no applicants.
Yeah.
Well, I a big thing here is I've known Carrie a long time, as Dominic has. And, I mean, you have the personality, and you're the type of person that we need in this business, and that, you know, to have in this business, because you're a compassionate person. You're a real go-getter. You get the job done. A lot of things that you have to be when you're in this business. You can't be just your average person. And sometimes we don't know that that's what we have to be until we get in the business, and then you have to be that person.
Well, that, you know, even people will say, wait, you do what? And I just say, I don't think you understand being able to look at a family and take people at the most difficult moment in their life and just sweep them up underneath my wings and just care for them and provide for them. It's one of the most rewarding things. You can't even put into words how rewarding that is, you know? And then they'll come back days, weeks, months later and just say, thank you, because I didn't even know heads from tails at that point. So.
Yeah, the fog is there. They don't know what they need. And again, like I said, you're the type of person that can see what they need, and you come up behind them and guide them through the process of what has to happen. And it's not easy, and it's very difficult. And then, like you said, the fog clears. Month or two, 3 months later, they come back and they're like, thank you, thank you, thank you.
That you truly do even make like another family, if that makes sense. You know, I have people that, you know, their wife passed 10 years ago, and they're coming in asking to see pictures of my kids and asking about my family. You know, you really, you cry with families, you laugh with families. It's just so interesting.
Yeah, and it's difficult too when you get to know folks and then they pass away. You get that phone call and you hear that the person you know passed away. It's difficult to hear. I mean, you've made these friendships with these folks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It is rewarding. You're correct. And you don't even realize half the time how impactful what you've done, you know, what you do working is on the families, how impactful it is on the families, until maybe later on, maybe they say it, or maybe you don't even know. But there's so many stories where I've worked with families, and then it comes back, you know, years later, somebody comes back and tells you, you know, that time it was so difficult, but you made it so easy. And they come up with this, you know, compassionate, very intimate story. And you had no idea. You just thought, like, oh my goodness, so you think that maybe that family is really angry at me, but they come back and tell you how impactful they are on you.
That. Yeah. And sometimes for us, it's like, oh, well, that was just your day's work.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Where correct. On the other hand, it's the most impactful thing the family sees.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We had a funeral on Tuesday, and I sold the lady the lots 15 years ago, right? Sold the lady the lots, did all that, and she just passed. And the son comes up and he's like, are you Bobby? And I said, yeah, how did you know that? He's like, my mom talked about you all the time. You know, and she would come visit, but sold her a marker, right? Like, husband got a government marker. And she goes, well, I want to have the exact same marker. I'm like, well, the government's not going to pay for you to get a government marker.
Yeah, yeah.
But we can make one very similar. But she was great. And, you know, she was older, just passed. But just a great woman in general. But it's funny because you get those type of people, right, where you have a son, a daughter, a granddaughter, a niece, a cousin, someone comes up and like, are you so-and-so? Because my grandmother and my mother, you know, they've talked about you before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how many funerals have you had where your entire staff is at the funeral because the person was a regular at the cemetery, got to know everybody, got to bring candy, got to, you know, brought soda or whatever to the grounds crew. So the funeral happens. I mean, we're kind of all standing up there. And I mean, a lot of the family members didn't realize that person maybe had a connection with us. They just think that, you know, oh, apparently they bring all, you know, six people out to their entire staff to the funerals. But no, it's just because that person had such an impact on our lives, too. We're so honored to be able to be there to actually bury this person and take care of them for eternity, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. One thing I do want to touch on, too, real quick is, you know, Carrie kind of started in a run where there wasn't a ton of ladies in the Minnesota Association of Cemeteries.
No, not at all.
Maybe a couple when you started.
Yeah.
And I want to say that Carrie has been president of the MAC. She carries has a big personality, a loud voice, and has really picked up a lot of the women that have come through now because we're seeing it more and more. And so I just want to kind of give you a little applause there because you do a really nice job at picking up these new ladies that are coming in to the MAC because it can be very intimidating coming into a room that's fairly male-dominated.
Absolutely.
Definitely not anymore. It's turned a lot. It has.
Yeah.
But when you started, you had to come in with all the old gray hairs, my dad. And
I was going to say, I think it's that too. Like not only being female, but I was also like the age of their children, really.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it was a bit intimidating, but then looking at it, you have the same thing we're talking about, right? Sweeping people up under your wings, really supporting people. And, you know, I remember when Dave Kemp came over to me and he just said, hey, listen, like, I'd like to nominate you as president. And I just thought, oh my word, here's somebody that has been in this industry, is such a figure to everybody that knows him.
Yeah.
And he's picking me. So being able to have the support come from the top down also meant so much too, right? Yeah. It gave me the confidence to just say, yeah, I can too. I knew that, but having someone else see that in me just meant so much. And it also opened my eyes to how important that is. Mm-hmm. So when you say that, it is important that, you know, yes, females and males that they know, like, come on, come get involved. Like we are such a unit here. So, but I really appreciate you seeing that and saying that, Bobby. That means a lot.
No, that's, I mean, I just, like I said, I just want to take a minute and say that because, you know, being a president now and being kind of a little more in control of what's going on, it's nice to see all the new ladies that are involved and guys involved, but see you come under their wings and kind of say, you know, have your voice, speak, you know, use your voice. Again, like I said, you came in with a lot of the old gray hairs and they were stubborn as hell, you know, and absolutely, that's just how they were, you know, but that's how, when they grew up, the era they grew up, it was different than what it is today.
Well, yeah, the industry in itself, that's what it was really. Yep. So.
Yeah. So I think it's really great. I just want to touch on that real
and
quick.
And if you, if you're considered one of those old gray hairs, please send all hate mail to Bobby Schoenrock. Yeah.
We love all of you too. Yeah. Know that.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with you guys. It was just a different time.
Were you the first female president of the MAC?
You know, I thought that for the longest time, but then I was told that there was a woman named Joyce. I don't know who she was or where she came from, but I think she only served like half of a term.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I was wondering that same thing. Maybe Dominic, who has some of the old records, can go through some of that.
I'll look into. I'll get into that next week. I'll have that information for you.
You better right back at you, bud.
Yeah, I mean, but even like we have a Twin Cities Association too, where the Twin Cities cemetery groups get together. And when I first started going there, Carrie, you were the only woman there, and now it's half, at least half, if not more half, more than half women. And it's great to see. It's on the cemetery side. It's really fun to see. I mean, even when we started, funeral directors was kind of really male dominated, and that's taken a turn. That definitely changed faster than the cemetery side of things.
Absolutely.
But it's definitely changed, and I think that's a good thing.
But the biggest thing is you need strong, vocal women like yourself involved, because that shows other women, hey, I can do this, right?
Yeah.
And so I can get in here, and just because this is a little intimidating, maybe I didn't work on the grounds, maybe I've never been in a backhoe before, but I can run this. I know what needs to be done. So I can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and when we're off the air, Bobby though says, if you don't know how to run a backhoe, there's no way you should be running a cemetery. I joke.
Well, that's because Dominic doesn't know how to run one anymore. Since they bought the new one, he doesn't know the controls.
Wait a minute.
I'm not even going to try to defend myself. Anyway, should we start talking about a little some cremation questions?
Yeah.
All right. So tell us, Carrie. So obviously, cremation has been something that's kind of been, well, not necessarily new now. It's been around for 20, 30 years. Maybe it's been around longer than that, but 20, 30 years where it's become more prevalent.
I will tell you too, if we're talking about how long it's been around, Forest Lawn has a crematory, and we did our first cremation in 1897.
Whoa.
So going back, crazy. If you're talking about timelines, that's how far back.
1897.
When did Forest Lawn start?
1893.
Oh, wow. Did they have a retort or a crematory right away?
I mean, shortly after, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
A couple logs out back.
Yeah.
I mean,
really.
Yeah. Probably really. A little hut, maybe something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It would be, I talk about this a lot, it would be great to go back in time and just see what was there and how things were done, right?
Oh, my word, if we could only. I mean, you can go back through the photos, but.
Yeah, doesn't do it justice.
No, not even a little bit.
So the first cremation done at Forest Lawn Cemetery was 1897.
Yeah, we served like the 5-state area.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And we are the 11th oldest continuously operating crematory in the United States.
Oh, really?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anybody in Minnesota? I mean, I don't need to call you out, but are you the oldest in Minnesota, or is there other crematories in Minnesota that are older?
Oh, geez. Okay, you're testing me. I'm fairly certain we're the oldest. Wow. In Minnesota, okay. Yes.
I would think if 1897, I mean, I just would think as far as it goes there that you're probably the oldest. But again, we don't know anything about crematories, so.
We're just
what you do,
according to Dominic.
What you do,
just like everything else. Yeah, just kind of pulling this out of our, you know what. But so 1893. So do you guys keep records on how many cremations you do a year, and when you know, kind of see a bell or a curve to it, or?
Yeah, absolutely. We keep track of all that information.
Yeah, so like early on, I assume it had to have been pretty slow. I mean, there wasn't many cremations going on.
Yes, very much so.
Is there any insight from the board or any old minutes on why they decided to put a retort in?
No, you know, the only thing that I can think of, I can think like with most cemeteries, like it was a farm at one point. And Ambrosini was his last name. That's who founded the cemetery. He kind of got into everything. So they had a monument making facility there. They had a greenhouse there. So you can kind of just see, based on that information, he was kind of an entrepreneur to begin with. So, I mean, that's just my guess behind it. I don't have any facts, but.
So you think that he just kind of wanted to be the leader and be an entrepreneur in the fact and say, well, I want to start this because this could be a trend.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously at that point in time, he had no idea what it would be like today, but
no.
But he thought maybe this could be something.
Could be something, yeah. And even we have a community mausoleum that was built in 1917, all imported marble from Italy, right? So, I mean, even just like that too, like he was an outside of the box thinker.
Yeah.
He was probably sitting there telling all the other board members, guys, this is going to be big. Trust me, it's going to be huge. And now he's looking back, you know, 120 years later.
Going,
I'm vindicated. I knew I was going to be right.
That. I mean, I don't want to step on his toes, but Shone Rock Monument started 1894.
Yeah. Oh, that's
Dominic keeps saying the word retort. Yeah. Can you please explain to us what that is?
Yes. So the word retort is the official name for what maybe, no offense, like common folk would consider like the oven. That's what the actual.
That's why I call it a retort. I'm a common folk.
You're a common folk. And that's okay. That's okay. But that would be the technical term would be retort.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's oven. And then, so you, there's so many questions I have because I don't understand the whole process. But it's not like you put it on bake for 450 and you slide a body in there. And I apologize to anybody who's listening. And this might be, a bit not graphic, but
or insensitive.
Insensitive, yeah. But I mean, Dominic, is there a temperature? Is there a temperature? I mean, how does it all work? Is there actually, does the body meet flames or what happens?
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing that I should say is that in order for us to accept the deceased, it has to be, the body has to be in a rigid leak-proof container. So okay. Minimum would be cardboard. Generally, you're going to see a cardboard container or like a wood casket.
So cardboard is considered leak-proof.
Yes.
Because it can absorb liquid?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So before you get it from whoever, if it's a cremation society, a funeral home, whoever
it
is.
The funeral home. Right? Yep. Yeah. Yep. Okay. It has to be in that container. Okay. We cannot accept it if it's not.
Sure.
Now, I assume it can't be in a container that's, you know, PVC or something like that. That can't necessarily be burned.
Correct.
Okay.
Nope. No.
Okay.
Even like metal caskets, yeah, same thing. Or even if it's in a casket, you know, you have to think like, we'll remove the hardware first, remove like the handles and things
like that.
Yeah. Yep. So, and then.
Is that your job or is that the job of like the funeral home coming in? They have to remove everything out of the casket?
So we will do that. Okay. I mean, the funeral home would generally do that. If they don't, we'll do that.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I think another thing to say, not to go too far off topic because of the question that you asked, we're regulated by the health department.
Okay.
Okay. So cremation was not regulated until 1996. Okay.
Now
so,
that's in the state of Minnesota,
which is crazy.
Yeah. Yes. So we're regulated by the health department. So the health department is going to give us all of these rules. So we cannot, the only person that can open the container is a licensed funeral director. So once we accept the deceased, the container is not open from that point forward.
Do you have licensed funeral directors on staff?
We do not.
Okay. Okay. So even if you did, could that licensed funeral director open the container?
Yes.
They could.
Yes.
Okay.
Just have to be a licensed funeral director.
Licensed funeral director. Yep.
But what would be the purpose of having to open the container? I assume maybe is if there's jewelry left or something like that. How many instances does that happen?
I mean, it doesn't happen very often. But another thing is that sometimes families like to witness the cremation.
Uh-huh.
Where they actually come to the crematory. Then they would like the container opened so they can say their last goodbyes. But again, if a licensed funeral director is not there, that's not something we can accommodate.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
But prior to 1996, you could do whatever.
Man, that's
even meaning like now it's regulated, even the container where sometimes they would be, and not to get too graphic, body bags wrapped in a sheet. You know what I mean?
That's wild.
Respectfully, but also.
But 1996 is not that long ago. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is.
You're dating yourself.
It is for some of the newer generations. I mean,
I'm in my 20s. That's before my time.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it really is crazy to think. But to get back to your question, the retort itself during the cremation process is anywhere from 1400 to 1800 degrees,
whoa,
not to exceed 2000.
That's a little more than your 450 on broil.
It gets a bit toasty, but it's kind of interesting you're talking about broil because, you know, part of the process is you do have to preheat, you know, you have to preheat the retort and make sure that it gets to, you know, a certain degree before you're actually going to put the deceased into it.
Do you always have the thing running?
Well, we run multiple retorts.
Okay.
We're also a 24-hour crematory. So we run our retorts often, but you know, if on a Sunday we don't have to cremate, I don't have my staff in, so it may stay cooler
for a day. Yeah. How long does it take to preheat?
Well, okay, so it depends.
Electric or gas?
I know, right? Well, and it depends.
There's
because
so many questions.
Yeah.
I know. Well, it really does. So it's all refractory, right? So it's all brick. So especially
refractory.
In Minnesota.
I'm a Tartan grad.
So especially in Minnesota, you know, it gets cold in the wintertime. Yeah. So those ovens cool off very quickly.
Yeah.
So if you're not running it for a day, you know, it's going to take maybe an hour to preheat versus, you know, if it was just run the day before, maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like when I do the scrambled eggs on my electric one, it only takes like 15 minutes, 10 minutes to get it up to speed.
And again, not to be insensitive, but you know, I've thrown the oven on and throw my pizza in before it's even preheated, let it kind of warm. Could you even do that and it just take longer for the body, or you wait until that's preheated?
Could you do it? Yes. Are you going to end up with the best cremation? No. And what I mean when I say that is, okay, so we are 70% water, right?
Yep.
So the first third of the cremation is really the dehydration process.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to take longer, obviously, if it's not as hot, for the dehydration to happen. But when it comes to even, and not to get too graphic, but even like the bones, the hotter, the whiter the bone is going to be.
Oh,
so realistically, the better, quote unquote, better cremation you're going to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So, I mean, does the flame then, I don't know if you answered, is the flame hit the body or is it just the heat?
No, the flame does hit the body.
The flame does hit the body.
Yes. So now I'm going to introduce something called the repositioning. So the first probably third of the cremation is like the dehydration. And you have two flames. You have one that's going to be right over the chest cavity, and then you have one that's going to be down closer to the feet. So after the dehydration process has happened, then what you want to do is you want to reposition the bones, right? Because the chest cavity is a lot thicker than, let's say, like the legs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to go in with a stoking tool. So again, terms, it's kind of like a garden hoe, what it would be. And you're going to kind of break that down and spread it out so that the flame hits all of it and not just like one spot.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, sure. That makes sense.
If you need help with that, don't call me. I'm busy.
No, thank you.
Yeah. That's one thing. I mean, it fascinates me, but I don't think I would want anything to do with it. And that's just my personal opinion on it. But it does fascinate me, like how it all works and everything. I just don't know if I could be the one to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and then so you said there's two basically flame or heat sources, the one right above the chest cavity and one right down by the feet. Now, is this like our propane torches that we're using to burn out graves and, you know, with our burners? It's exactly that.
Yeah.
And it's all propane or natural gas or what is it?
Yeah, natural.
Mm-hmm. Natural gas. So it's piped in right from the...
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I assume the bill for natural gas has to be insane.
Right. Very much so.
Wow.
And, you know, and then it depends on your volume too, right? And then not only that, but as the retort gets hot... And then as you cremate throughout the day, it goes faster too, you know, because everything's warm, it's hot, you know,
you do
have to cool down in between the cremations.
Okay. Just to pull the body out, just so the person or safety wise or.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Because if it's not cool enough, I mean, you have to remember that you're putting either cardboard or wood into a hot retort. You got to make sure it's cool enough so that you can get it in. It just doesn't
eviscerate right in front of your face.
Yeah. Yep.
Is there a certain safety equipment that you have to wear when you're placing a body inside the retort?
So we require gloves, goggles,
okay,
masks, things like that.
Do they have to wear what am I trying to say?
Like a fireman suit
or like a
smock?
Yeah.
No, not required.
Not required. Okay.
No.
And now does the health department still have say in that too? Like what needs to be, do they say you need to wear certain things going in and out or
no?
Is that more just like your deal?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's more like self-regulated.
Yeah. You know. Okay. Makes sense.
That is interesting. So then you get to the point. Okay. So you're telling me that you can't open the casket, obviously, without a funeral director. At what point is it the casket, obviously the casket dissolves or burns, and now the body's visible. At what point does the health department say that's all right that the body's visible without a funeral director, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I guess what I would say is the moment the cremation starts. So the moment that you put that casket into the retort itself.
Okay. That's interesting. Now, what happens if there's jewelry, if there's, I mean, obviously we see it a little bit on our side, pacemakers, things like that. What happens? Does that just all melt and go away or?
No, I mean, it depends. So the first thing that I'll say is that when the funeral home makes contact with us, letting us know that they want the decedent cremated, one of the questions that we ask is, does the decedent have a pacemaker? Because we require that they be removed because there's a battery in it. So if it's not removed, it will explode.
Okay.
Now, it's not going to cause damage or anything like that. The noise may be
a little shocking.
Shake up the crematory operator a little bit.
Yeah.
Even a small battery?
But yeah. Yep.
Oh, interesting.
I can imagine. I mean, not saying that I've done this, but I've heard if you throw a battery in a bonfire... It's pretty bad.
But also does not know by personal experience.
Yes, correct. Correct.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so yeah. It might shake up the operator a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But you do, I mean, to kind of go down the road that you may be going down, after the cremation is complete, you don't just have ash. People think, oh, well, that's the cremation, so now you have this urn with ashes. Well, it doesn't work that way. So what you have to do is you have to clean out the retort. So you would use, a wire brush to do so, a metal blade to do so. And you really do end up, you do end up with some ash, but you end up with bone.
Yeah.
So you take that out, it goes into a pan. Once it cools, we then go over it with a big magnet. Because if you think about it, especially in this day and age, dental work, you have metal.
Hips, knees. Oh, yeah. That was my next question,
yes,
actually.
Hips, knees, yeah. Everything like that. So we take out all of the recyclable material.
Okay.
Sure.
Put that aside. Then you're left with bone.
Okay.
And then you may say, well, then what happens? Then the bone is put into a processor.
Yeah.
Or easier terms would be like a big blender.
Okay.
And it's
a bone crusher, maybe?
Yeah.
Pulverizer.
Yeah. So it is then processed, and then that's when you end up with the cremated remains.
Now, do family members, are they allowed to even put like mementos, like photos and things like that with the body while they're doing the cremation?
Yeah, anything that they would want to.
Interesting. Now, you're going to love this because this is going to be the segue they have to Paradise Pictures for our break.
Oh, here we go.
Talking about mementos and photos. So when it comes to honoring a life well lived, every detail matters. And that's why Paradise Pictures has been crafting premium fired porcelain on steel portraits since 1991. Built to last a lifetime and guaranteed against any damage. I don't know, Carrie, if you use Paradise Pictures, but if you don't, you definitely should, because you can put Paradise Pictures, a porcelain photo, on niche fronts, on some mausoleums, columbariums, and here's the kicker. They are lifetime guaranteed. So if anything happens to those things, they'll send you a new one out for free. Bobby
That's
uses
right.
these guys all the time.
Yeah, and actually, I know. And actually, we just had one replaced. That there was just a chip in the corner, and we called them and said, "Hey, this, there's a little chip in here. We need to reorder it." Oh, the chip? Oh, okay. We'll take care of it.
Not a problem.
Boom! Send it right back.
Nice. And it rarely happens, but yeah. when it does, yeah. they take care of it.
Yep.
But also, but here's the deal too: if you're a member of or listening to the podcast here. Just call or go to paradisepictures.com or call 1-800-960-8040 and they'll give you two free samples just for listening. Wow. So give them a call, or go to the paradisepictures.com. Let them know that you listen to the Cemetery Chronicles.
I wonder if I can pretend like I'm a new customer and get two free samples.
Use your house address.
You can call. Yeah. All right. We'll be back in a little bit here. All right. We are back. Got a little refreshments in us, and we're back. We have so many more questions. We were just telling Carrie how this topic is so foreign to us, but yet we are so curious about it. I don't know.
Carrie could be on here for like six more podcasts, and I don't know if we would be able to get all this fit in.
Well, I know. I mean, we don't even – but the thing is, we have so much more to talk about with Carrie besides cremation. Yeah. We could talk about cemetery stuff all day long with Carrie as well. We should definitely have
Absolutely.
Well, we'll see.
Wait a minute.
We'll see if we get any more sponsors or if the ratings go up at all.
If you'd like to hear from me again, please let either one of these guys know.
There you go.
Yeah. And everybody's going to be emailing us, "I'd rather listen to Carrie than Bobby or Dominic."
That's probably what's going to happen. So
have you considered three people as permanent? Yeah.
That might happen too.
Yeah, we'll see.
You guys know where to find me.
Oh, perfect. So let's get back. So you say you throw the bones and everything in the pulverizer. Is that right?
Yes.
How long does that take?
That is correct. It's very quick.
No, oh, really?
It's very quick. They're metal blades, very sharp. So I would say that takes a minute or two.
Yeah. So do you have to, how often does this piece of equipment have to be maintained? or maintain, you know, like sharpening blades and that?
Yeah. Well, we sharpen the blades generally once a month, I would say.
Really?
Yeah. And then replace them probably every 6 months.
Okay, oh, so really? You kind of have to stay on top of
absolutely
things big time, which I think you would do, right, as far as all of this stuff goes. You know, like the floors and the retorts, all that stuff. I mean, you have to pretty much stay on top of all the maintenance of it.
Yeah, you do. We have them serviced once a year, just looked at. Again, it's refractory. So we have the floors redone every 3 years, and then the retort itself rebuilt every 7 years.
So the thing's made out of clay bricks, is that
yeah
what it is?
So the question I have, too, is where do you find people that repair this? I mean, it fascinates me. It's like anything else, right? You know, there isn't a ton of places around that have tools for granite, you know, or lowering devices, right? But, you know, you just look up the yellow pages, you know, who can fix my retort? You know?
Right. No, no, that's, I mean, it's so true. So we work hand in hand with Matthews. So Matthews is down in, well, Orlando and Pittsburgh. But that's who we've purchased the retorts from. And then that's, we work hand in hand with them and have them service them too.
Okay. So they probably have a, like a sister company or someone that they work with in town here. That is,
no,
or it's
no, they fly them in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
At least you know then you're getting someone who knows the equipment up and down.
That. Well, and that is another reason why we choose to use them too, because it's their equipment.
Yeah.
They built it.
Yep.
So I want them using their team. I want them using their equipment, yeah, you know.
Well, it's like anything else, right? You bring someone in that you know, doesn't necessarily work on your Chevy truck, your Ford truck, your, you know, New Holland tractor. If they're not used to it, if they haven't worked on a lot of them, they take them a lot longer and they may not know what they're doing.
That.
So if you have someone who knows the product, built the product, knows up and down, and they can fly them in to come look at them, then that's even better.
Yeah.
I mean, when did you replace them last? I mean, how often do they need to be replaced?
So, again, the floors every 3 years. And
but
then
not the whole unit doesn't need
the
to be
whole unit every 7 years.
Seven, that's what you said. Okay,
yeah.
7 years. Really?
Yeah.
That's not that long of a lifespan.
It's not. I mean, it really isn't. If you think about, especially in terms of what we use in everyday cemetery equipment as far as trucks and lawnmowers and tractors and stuff like that, I mean, you know, we try to get, you know, 20 years, 15 years out of this stuff.
Exactly. Well, and that's also why we have them come and even just service them, right?
Yeah.
Just, like, look at them. Like, is everything running appropriately? Does anything need to be replaced or fixed?
How often are you flying them in?
So we do that once a year.
Once a year.
Okay. Oh, really?
And then after that, depending on if they need to be serviced,
sure.
You would then, you know, so maybe they're in 2-3 times a year, depending on what we would need them for.
So do you, quick question on that. Do your guys have to, who are working with everything, the retorts, you know, the pulverizer, do they have to, they go to a class? Does someone teach, you know, I mean, how do they, you know what to look for, I guess?
Okay. So, there is no class. It is all on the job training.
Really? Yeah.
So what I will tell you is that yes, the crematory is regulated by the health department, but as far as the actual operator themselves goes, there's no sort of regulation. So we, again, self-regulated.
Yeah.
So we choose to have all of our crematory operators certified through either CANA or the ICCFA.
Okay.
So.
Oh, so they have certification.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Huh. So how many do you have? How many operators do you have?
So right now we have six.
Six operators. Okay.
And you're running pretty consistently, 24/7.
I mean, we are a 24/7 crematory. You know, when the rate of cremation, few reasons why we do it. When the rate of cremation went up the way that it did, in that initial phase is when you saw things still being a little bit more traditional. So it would be the wake on Tuesday night, burial on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was in that process where they would have the body present for the wake, but then they needed to bury cremated remains.
Sure.
Next day,
the funeral home would come over after the wake, 8-9 o'clock at night, and then we would have to have the cremated remains back to them in the morning for the burial.
Well, that sounds like a scheduling nightmare.
Yeah.
Well, Not really. I mean, we got pretty good at it, imagine. Having rotations and things like that. You know, you see less and less of that just because, you know, as the collective, you just see people moving away from the quote unquote traditional.
Yeah. But you were mentioning, I don't know if this was before we were on air or not, that you have 24 hours to cremate a body once in your custody, right?
Yes. Yep. So we're regulated by the health department, and that would be statute 149A. And there it says that we have to have the cremation started within 24 hours of acceptance.
So that's where scheduling must come in, where you have to, I have these bodies that don't necessarily need to be cremated immediately because burial is not going to happen whenever, or then I have one that has a wake this night and they want to bury the next day. So I have to schedule that immediately. I mean, that's kind of daunting.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, and I think especially, you know, the traditional workday, right? Like 9 to 5, if you want to say. But let's not forget about Christmas, or not forget about Easter or a Sunday. Yeah. You know, that's where, you know, I have a fantastic staff that is so willing, and they kind of understand it. So,
So the question I have for you is, you know, Dominic and I see the scheduling side of just a regular burial, which you're still doing at Forest Lawn, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have funerals and, you know, you're also a cemetery, you're doing this, but now you have scheduling for the crematory.
Correct.
So do you have to have more help staff for that? Or is that what, you know, yourself and Beth, you know, who works in the office, do you guys do all the scheduling for that? Or do you have a separate person that...
No. So the scheduling as far as, the cemetery and the crematory is concerned is all done right out of the office.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so the same person doing that.
Yeah. I was just wondering if that was a whole new, you know, you had to add on for that. Cause like, you know, like I said, with Dominic and I, you know, there can be a time where there's three of us in the office on the phone, yeah. One on a cell phone, two on the two lines, trying to just schedule a burial.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, an upcoming burial the next day. Where you need more help than one or two people. So yeah. I can imagine that it can be a little yeah. much sometimes.
Very much so. I mean, and then it's also like that side of things, but then also the actual work.
Yeah.
So, you know, even having more staff in the crematory on the grounds in order to accommodate that.
Yeah.
And when you schedule for like a cremation itself, is there a standard how long this is going to take or is it like, it's different per individual. Larger individual might take a lot longer versus smaller. I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different factors. So a lot of people would just immediately think, oh, well, it's a bigger person, so it's going to take longer. Not necessarily the case. Because like we say, 70% of the body is water. Mm-hmm. So the dehydration happens, and then all of a sudden, everybody's on an even playing field.
Yeah.
So it really is more... the taller the person, the longer it's going to take.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So do you, when you're, it's kind of a weird question, but when you're scheduling, you know, cremations and how long it's going to take, are you asking the funeral directors how tall the person is?
No, not at all. And not only that, but that's more like internal. So the way that it'll work is the funeral home will just call us and let us know that they're going to bring someone over. And throughout that process, we gather information, right? We're talking about like the pacemaker and things like that. We will ask them, when would you like them returned back? Okay. Our normal course of business, we're turning around because we have to have the cremation done in 24 hours. We also deliver the remains back to the funeral homes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would just ask them when they would like it back. And our normal turnaround time is just generally a day or two.
Oh, okay.
But as far as kind of what you're talking about, there is kind of a method to the madness when it comes to the actual crematory itself, depending on, you know, is it the first cremation of the day, second, third, right? And you're paying more attention to, you know, you're probably going to want to put a lighter person in right away in the morning. A heavier person in right away in the morning. So the retort's not that hot, right?
Sure.
So that sort of processing, moving through and things like that is more left up to the crematory operator themselves.
Yeah. So it's kind of like everything, right? Like when you're digging a grave, when you're lowering a casket, right? There's a method to the madness behind what works best, which ways you want to go with things.
Right.
Right. So I can see that.
Right.
And also just for reference, my mom told me that when I was little that I was big boned. So maybe I would take longer. I don't know.
I wasn't suggesting anything, Bobby.
At least that's what my mom still tells me.
So I assume it's got to put a major cramp in the things if a retort unexpectedly goes down.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, how often does that happen?
You know, it doesn't happen that often, but it has. I mean, it has happened where there's nothing you can do. There really is nothing you can do, especially kind of going back to what we were talking about. When, listen, we have, especially some of our, like our OG staff, right? Like that have been there forever. They've worked with the equipment. They know the equipment inside and out. So there's certain things that they can do, but when it's out of our control, that's when we're waiting on somebody that's in a completely different state. You're a flight away. You're not just, I'll pay the 24-hour fee for you to get here at 8 o'clock at night. It doesn't work that way.
To get my furnace going again.
Right? No.
You're not calling one of the furnace places or the air conditioning. Yeah, I get that. That's right. And like Dominic said, it's got to really be tough because then everything gets thrown off.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And even to the point where sometimes we may have to say, like, I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Yeah.
You know?
I can see that.
And this is what I will say. In my 20-plus year career, that has happened one time.
Oh, yeah.
So thankful. I know. Yeah. Knock on the wood. Knock on all of the wood. But also with that, I will say, you know, our clients gave us so much grace. Much grace. You know, it's out of your control. There's nothing you can do.
Well, I mean, it's so funny because even this part of the business that, you know, we have been talking about through the first five episodes now on episode six here with the crematory stuff is that, I mean, it just all goes back to you try to do things as perfect as you can so the families don't know any of the wiser, right? But things do happen, and you have to sometimes bend over backwards, get somebody on a flight out here immediately. Your older staff who knows tricks are doing every trick they know and staying later. Things are taking longer, right? It just kind of goes back to the whole concept of, you know, when you're in this business in general, like we don't have that, sorry we didn't hit the deadline. We'll get it to you in 2 weeks.
That.
I mean, it's just, it goes back to that. And you know, I guess I never even pictured it as working so much in this type of thing too, right? I mean, you can't make these mistakes and things can't happen. You have to deal with it. You have to quick thinking. So
now, are you a crematory operator?
I am.
You are?
I am.
So have you been over there at nights and weekends and whenever there's staffing needs and they can't?
Absolutely.
I never knew that. Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
So
oh my word, I've been certified for probably 12 years.
Okay. Now, we're not going to say his name because we don't want to give him any credit for anything. But the other guy in the office that helps you out over there, is he a certified crematory operator?
Yes.
He is?
Yes.
Okay.
He started on the grounds and then was actually the crematory manager.
Oh, he was.
For a stint of time.
I didn't know that either.
Yes.
We're not going to say his name, though.
No.
We don't want to give him credit. We'll give Beth credit. Beth credit.
He's desperate listening right now. Please say my name. Yeah.
But that, I did not know that. Okay. So you guys can jump in if you need to at any point in time and help out. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, goes back to the very thing that we talk about. You know, you're running a cemetery. It just goes back to you don't expect employees to do things that you don't know how to do yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, it goes back to that. And my thing has always been, how do you run a business, run a cemetery, run a company without knowing all the aspects of it and not being willing to do the work?
Yourself. You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
And just to kind of rewind or backtrack just a little bit, I do know how to work the backhoe. I've worked the backhoe just because I don't actively do it. I do know how to do it. But no, Bobby, it's so true. And the other thing too is because we're a 24-hour crematory, you know, we do have rotations and things like that. But I also have staff that live a distance away.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
So, you know, if a funeral home calls and they're in a panic and I need to bring so-and-so over, you know, that's when I'm like, I got you. You come over. And then it's anybody. Okay. Who's closest? Who can help out? And sometimes that's me. Sometimes it's the crematory staff.
Sometimes it's that weird guy in the
office.
That
other person that we're not going to mention. Him too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think it's great. Like I said, I don't know if I could do it, to be honest. It fascinates me, but I just don't know if I could do it.
Now, do you have to be a funeral home to schedule a cremation with your can, like, Uncle Joe from up in the, you know, the Iron Range bring down Aunt Louise who passed away in the Ford truck and back it up?
Well, you can't do that. I mean, you can't do that, but this is what we would look for. Well, first things first, funeral home, just because there are clients, right?
Yeah.
So, especially not being the funeral home ourselves. So generally it's the rapport that's already there. We know you. But in order to even accept a deceased, the health department is going to tell me I need three specific forms in order to do so. You're going to need a disposition permit.
Okay.
You're going to need a medical examiner report. And then you're going to need a family signed authorization. So could a family do it themselves? There is a way to do it, yes. But you got to get all three forms of paperwork.
Have you ever seen it?
Never.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think so.
No.
I mean, I just wouldn't think that, you know, Uncle Joe coming, you know, it wouldn't benefit him to drive down rather than the funeral home or whatever.
Now, let me say this. We have had it where people know that we have a crematory.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the thing is that the general public can't come directly to me.
Correct.
Okay. That's when I'm like, I'm sorry, you need to call your local funeral home. People get very confused about that.
Yep.
But, I mean, we have had it where this old man pulled up and came into the office and just said, my wife is in the car and I need to have her cremated. And we're like, whoa, wait a minute.
Was she in a casket?
No. She
just
had
in
just,
the passenger side
Yes,
seat?
She had just passed. So, I mean, have we had it? Yes, but that's more just like redirection.
What a weekend at Bernie's.
Exactly. Where you're just like, oh my gosh. And then people get so confused and you just have to say, but listen, that it's your wife, but if the police pull you over and you just say, well, my wife just died, you're the first suspect here, you know? So
drug her out of the house, buckled her. Oh my gosh.
I mean, I know.
You have to, I mean, it's goes back to what we talk about in previous episodes of you're in such a fog that you're not thinking clearly.
People
don't know. You know, so but him doing that, probably that was what he needed to do.
Yeah.
Even though it's not even close, but that's what he thought.
Yeah, right.
You know, a month earlier, she's fine. He knows he needs to get a hold of a funeral home, but then something happens and the fog clicks in, right?
Well, I mean, keep on the trend of insensitive questions, I guess. What's the craziest thing you've, like, found? Like, all of a sudden you cremated somebody and they're laying on the bed is, like, a light bulb or something like that. Is there anything like that, like, crazy stuff?
Well, nothing crazy like that, but I'm gonna kind of take the question, I'm gonna flip it just a little bit,
make it a little more sensitive.
So, well, and it's not necessarily like what we found after the cremation, because you're talking 2000 degrees, right? At max, so you're really not gonna have a lot left over, but
just my big bones,
just the big bones that are left. But you know, sometimes when the funeral home contacts us, they will say the family would like all metal back.
Okay.
So whether there was some sort of infusion or hip replacements, knee replacements. And I got into a conversation with a funeral director and I just said, you know, it's so interesting. I wonder why. Like, why do you want it back? And I get that it's emotional and it's sentimental and things like that right now. But then you have to think about down the line, what are you going to do with it in 3 years? Yeah. Not saying that you're not going to care, but your grieving is just looks so different, right? Yeah. Then how are you going to get rid of it, you know?
Yeah.
And who else is going to want it after?
Well, right. So I was asking this funeral director, we were kind of just having this conversation, and she just said, oh, well, the family has big plans. And I said, oh, well, like what? And she said, they're making a wind chime. And I just thought, oh, my word, you want the metal from your deceased mother back so you could make a wind chime? And not to be insensitive, but you just think, wow. So to kind of answer it kind of backwards, that I would say that's maybe one of the craziest things that I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine there's terribly too much metal, unless maybe this individual, they knew like, all these fake hips and everything. You're like, there's probably a lot of metal in there.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
I noticed you had a wind chime out on the tree
here. Wait a minute, Dom, where'd that come from?
Yeah, that is a little wild. wild to me. Yeah. You know, and you know, we've all been there. We've seen it all, right?
Yeah.
We could go on for days with story upon story, but it would be pretty insensitive probably. But,
yeah.
But, you know, just the stuff that people put into a casket or on top of a casket or even in an urn vault, like when we do burials for that, or a niche, whatever it is. So I can only imagine, you know, like the stuff to... you know, we've had people where say, hey, can we get a scoop of those ashes? You know, I want to take them home. Yep. And I said, well, we got to talk to the next of kin.
The next of kin
I
first,
can't
yeah.
just get a spoon in here and here you go and go from there. But yeah, I can just only imagine what people do. And
that. And I think, you know, talking about it too, you have to remember that when they get to us, it's an enclosed container.
Yeah.
So there could be a multitude of things in with them.
Yeah.
But we don't necessarily know that because it's closed and
it's
we can't
so
open it.
That whatever's left is left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know, I mean, we have so many more questions, but we should probably wrap it up here.
Yeah.
We want to welcome you, Carrie, to the Paradise Pictures studio at the poker table at the Paradise Pictures studio.
Different than the poker table I was sitting at last week when I had beers in my hand and talking.
I went back and I was watching the video a little bit, trying to sync everything up, and I was like, my goodness, I didn't realize that Bobby was drinking beer throughout the whole thing. That's why it was so entertaining.
Yeah.
But anyways, Carrie, we welcome you. Thank you so much for hanging out with
us. So happy to be here. Thank you guys so much.
We'll definitely have to have you again. I think this is so fascinating. There's so many more questions that are going through my head.
Yeah. As always, we fly through these episodes and then all of a sudden it's over and there's many other questions we could have asked.
Oh,
but appreciate your time and thanks again for coming over.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And if anybody has any questions out there, but any general questions about cemetery things that you'd like Bobby or I to talk about or guests you'd like to have or you would like suggest that we should have on and ask questions, feel free to shoot us an email, info@thecemeterychronicles.com. Yeah, that's what we got. All right, everybody, have a good week. We will see you next week.
See you later.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast so you are notified when new shows are posted. If you would like to get a hold of us, please email us at info@thecemeterychronicles.com.
Hey, everybody, Dominic here. When it comes to honoring a life well lived, every detail matters. That's why Paradise Pictures has been crafting premium fire porcelain on steel portraits since 1991, built to last a lifetime and guaranteed against any damage. Whether it's monuments, markers, crypts, or glass front niches, Paradise Pictures offers a full suite of personalized memorialization solutions, including elegant bronze frames. As a proud member of Minnesota Association of Cemeteries, they believe samples sell products, so they're offering you a free sample just for listening. Visit ParadisePictures.com or call 1-800-960-8040 to request yours today. Paradise Pictures, preserving memories beautifully.